Welcome back to the beginning of the third and final hour of this week's Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky, and still privileged to be joined in studio by State Senator Greg Brophy. Let's change topics here for a little bit, Greg. I want to talk to you a little bit about healthcare. I got a letter from my health insurance company, which I won't name, but generally I actually like reasonably well. And basically, in February, my premiums are going up 17%. And a lot of it is due to Obamacare. Yeah, so a lot of it is due to Obamacare. Yeah, actually, I mean, when you think about the amount that my insurance is going up, and I'm just going to speak in percentages, but, you know, it's enough over the course of a year to make a difference. And, you know, to be, you know, the, you know, some plane flights to somewhere, or, you know, something that could really be a good thing in your life. Now, I don't know exactly when this happened. Perhaps you can tell me, but I learned that one of the provisions that's impacting my health insurance is that it is now being required to cover maternity, required to cover childbirth. Now, childbirth is a very expensive process to begin with, but also that very small risk of something going wrong creates this outlying possibility of a hugely expensive proposition in childbirth, which the insurance companies have to build into their pricing, because one out of every how many childbirths costs them an extra six or seven figures because of some problem that comes along. Now, and just to put this even a little more in context, and I wrote this, I might point you all to the American Spectator website, spectator.org. And if you search for contributors and look for my name, you will find a letter from me. Well, it's called an open letter to my Congress people, but I really sort of wrote it as an article for Spectator about healthcare. You can read the whole thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I point in there, which it may be what we've come to call TMI, too much information these days, but I point in there, I'll just read you the sentence. Given that I've already had a date with a scalpel, it's extremely unlikely that my wife and I will have more children. So having to pay for insurance to cover childbirth is an unnecessary burden. And I was surprised to learn that this problem is being caused by the state and not by Obamacare. So first question is, do you know anything about how that provision came into being? And second, is there anything that can be done about it?
Yeah, let me give you the gutter politics on this. In the first case, almost all of your health insurance problems are caused, almost all of them are caused by the state government until the passage of Obamacare, because the feds had traditionally stayed out of that area of influence. So it had traditionally been up to the various states. Now, here's the gutter politics. We had worked over the past decade as a Republican Party trying to reduce the number of mandates required on your health insurance policies. When you think about it, I mean, your automobile insurance it's much easier to shop for it. You go to Geico, there's no mandates. You can buy whatever deductible you want. You can have liability only, liability $150,000, liability to $1 million, you know, full coverage, whatever you want. It's all up to you. The market works pretty well there, but here's what happens in healthcare politics, because it's all politics and it's really ugly. Several years ago, probably 8 years ago, we voted to remove a lot of the mandates and create what we call the mandate light policy here in Colorado to reduce the cost of health insurance. I don't even know if it actually reduced the cost of health insurance, but it might have kept it from going up as fast. And then the next election cycle, a good number of Republicans were defeated by their Democrat opponents on an ad campaign that said Representative so-and-so voted to do away with your breast cancer coverage. That's the gutter politics, and it just scared the bejesus out of every elected official that there is. Anybody who's in a tight race is almost committing political suicide to vote against any of these touchy-feely mandates. And so you got the maternity mandate. The average birth now is a little over $10,000. So if you've got a cover, I mean, you know, if the probability of insured X being pregnant is 30%, or probably 20% in any given year, there's a probability of almost a certain probability then of an $11,000 bill. And then you, as you mentioned, the possibility of a $100,000 bill, or even more if you have a you know, a real problem at childbirth. And there's one way around this. Okay. The good news is there's a way around it. The bad news is that the Democrats are still in charge here in Colorado, so we won't be able to implement it. But what we really need to do is just to allow people to buy health insurance across state lines. And that way, a smart entrepreneurial health insurance company would set up a no-frills policy in a solid state that would allow them to do that. Maybe even Iowa, because Iowa is pretty sensible about regulating business that goes on outside of the state of Iowa. In other words, almost no regulation on those guys. And it really attracts a lot of insurance companies to Iowa for their headquarters. If that happened, then you could buy your whatever policy you wanted. And what we need to do is, and we introduce this bill almost every year to allow citizens of Colorado to buy across state lines or buy an insurance policy from outside the state. And the ninny nannies at the Capitol say, well, no, I mean, you know, Ross, he doesn't know what he needs. Like, we know what he needs. So they always defeat the bill and it goes down in flames. But that's the way you solve the problem without having the political price to pay.
So is it a state law that prevents me from buying health insurance from another state? Because if so, that would imply that every single state has that state law that blocks it, because I'm not aware of any state where people are allowed to buy from any other state.
It's a state law. It's and almost, as far as I know, all states regulate heavily the sale of health insurance inside the state boundaries, and I can guarantee you that whatever nasty Graham mail piece and radio ad you heard about Senator so-and-so wanting you to have breast cancer or Representative so-and-so wanting you to die of breast cancer has run in every state where this issue comes up and everybody's afraid of it.
Well, and I can imagine also the insurance companies are, even though one might think that they would love the idea of being able to get more business by getting people from other states, they wouldn't be for this because we're a captive market right now, and so it allows them to keep their prices higher, and it's much less competitive.
You know as well as I do, what they want is a stable regulatory environment that is something that doesn't change much over time, and that's how they make money.
Yeah, you know, so I actually contacted my health insurance broker to say, you know, can you take a look? Is there any point in talking to the health insurance company and complaining about a 17% increase? And she said, look, you've got a plan. You've been in for a while. You're basically grandfathered into this particular plan, which is just a concept that's, you know, come up under Obamacare. You know, the idea that you need to be grandfathered into something. And in fact, the propaganda from my health insurance company says, you know, you get to stay in this plan. Like, I should be, you know, praising the Lord that I can stay in this health insurance plan. And then they go on to say that, you know, after 2014, my choices will probably be even much more limited than they are now. In any case, I spoke to my broker and she said, okay, you're in this older plan. I went to research what their newer plans are, and they're all much worse in terms of benefits and much more expensive. So you got to stay where you are. In the meantime, yeah, I'm grandfathered. I can stay in this thing as long as I don't change anything about it. But meanwhile, I used to get, my family used to get free preventative care, mm-hmm. you know, well baby checkups and this sort of thing. And it's not that necessarily I expect things for free, but the health insurance company figured out that it saved them money to take care of some of these things early. So they said, we will give them this preventative care free. Now with Obamacare, now that they know I'm stuck, my health insurance company is getting rid of the free preventative care. So I'm only grandfathered in the sense that I can stay in unless I change anything, but these guys are allowed to make it a lot worse for me, and I'm a captive. And I'm just hoping that millions of people will be extremely angry about this when it comes up. And as I was talking earlier in the show before you came on, I doubt that there's any way to get the Senate to pass a repeal of Obamacare, and I understand that nothing that the Senate and the House do will have enough votes to override Obama's sure veto, but still, that would be an incredible political message going into the 2012 elections. I think it would give Republicans control of the Senate, although I already think they're relatively likely to get it because they're twice as many seats that Democrats need to defend in the U.S. Senate in 2012 as Republican seats.
And it will be interesting to see if those guys, and I wonder where Senator Udall and Senator Bennett are going to be on this. If they want to reform the filibuster rule now, they better be looking ahead about 3 years, because I think the Republicans will have a slim majority in the United States Senate after the 2012 election, and the Democrats like Mark Udall will be filibustering to save their lives.
I completely agree. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk a little bit about daylight savings time, believe it or not. Perhaps Senator Greg Brophy has a way to make that interesting. So stay with us right here through this break on Backbone Radio. We'll be right back.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong.
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. I'm your host, Ross Kaminsky. Joshua Scharf behind the glass. State Senator Greg Brophy in the studio with me. Before we leave health insurance, one thing I just want to mention. I'll probably mention this repeatedly over the next couple of years as the debate about Obamacare and health insurance in general goes on and on and on and on, but it is this idea of pre-existing conditions. And in my article for the American Spectator, I'm just going to read you one paragraph. Soon, Obamacare will prevent insurance companies from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. A brief conversation I had with my bank teller who used to work for a large insurance company might be instructive. When I asked her if someone who just found out that he has cancer should be able to then apply for and receive health insurance coverage, she said, "Of course everybody has the right to access health care." After I pointed out to her that everybody already does have the right to access health care and that that's not dependent on insurance, I asked her whether someone who just wrecked his car should then be able to apply for and receive auto insurance coverage and use that to get a new car. And her response, and remember she used to work for an insurance company, was, "That's illegal." Followed by a clear explanation that she made, not me, a clear explanation of why that wouldn't be fair to existing policyholders. So in short, forcing coverage of pre-existing conditions is not insurance, it's welfare. And I just wanted to get that out there, and you will probably hear me say that many times over the next months and years here on Backbone Radio. Greg, any comment on that?
If I knew that I could insure my car after I wrecked it, or insure my house after the fire started, or insure my farm commodities after they've burned up, I would always wait and buy the insurance after the fact. Or if I could buy that, we can buy hail insurance on the farm to cover our corn if you get hailed out or onions, whatever crop you're growing. If I knew I could buy the insurance after the hailstorm came in, I would never buy the insurance in April when I do.
Right. And if something happened where the government said you can buy the insurance right after, which is, it's sort of hard to imagine, although you can see anything from this government, imagine what the price would be, right? And imagine what the price would be for all the people who didn't do it that way, who bought insurance and just kept it the whole time. But you don't need very many people buying it after the damage has happened, which is exactly what this pre-existing conditions thing is, to massively increase the price because insurers at that point know that all of the people who are applying for so-called insurance at that time are only applying because they have big claims to make.
Actually, the price would be zero because no one would sell it to you.
Right. Except that Barack Obama would then try to force them to sell it to you. Now, look, let's go to the most fascinating topic of the evening, daylight savings time. I am told that you have a bill regarding daylight savings time, and that it was the most read bill on the most read news story on Nine News's website when the story came out. What is going on with daylight savings time?
You know, it was a funny story when we fell back in the fall, switched from daylight savings time to standard time. We're on standard time right now. I posted on my Facebook page that I hate the time changes, but I did mention the one in the fall doesn't really bother me at all. It's that one in March that just eats my lunch. And I get up early in the morning anyway, but for some reason, giving up that hour in March just tears my body up. And so I got a lot of comments back on Facebook. They said, "Yeah, me too. I hate it. You know, run a bill, fix that thing." And so I said, "Well, you know, I don't have the majority in the Colorado State Senate, so I can't run school reform. I can't run, you know, right to work. I can't reform welfare and Medicaid. I can't run a Vermont-style concealed carry. I can't do all of the things I'd love to do. So why not have one fun bill to work on this year? So I had a bill drafted to keep Colorado on daylight savings time year-round, which, by the way, is contrary to the federal law. So if we actually passed it, we'd have to go to court and make the case that Colorado is being unequally treated compared to the state of Arizona, which has the right to stay on standard time year-round, different than its northern neighbor. And I don't believe that under equal consideration, fair consideration across the, you know, treating all of the states evenly, they can disallow Colorado staying on daylight savings time year round. But that's what the bill will do. It probably won't pass because it's easier to say no than it is to take a chance on something like that. But I'm running that bill.
Are you getting a lot of good feedback?
A lot of feedback, probably 80% positive, 20% negative. It was the most clicked story on the Denver Post, and it was the most clicked story on Channel 9's website when the story broke back in December. The Denver Post ran a non-scientific poll, and a plurality of people wanted to stay on daylight savings time year-round. A slightly lower number of people wanted to keep it as it is, and the smallest number clicked on stay on standard time year-round. And oh, by the way, there's a fellow out of the San Luis Valley who's running a bill to keep us on standard time year-round.
Wow. You guys should arm wrestle over that hour. So what's, in your mind, what's the benefit of choosing daylight savings time permanently versus standard time permanently?
Well, Colorado's on the eastern edge of a time zone. And it gives us, if we stay on daylight savings time year-round, it gives us an extra hour in the evening after we get off of the traditional work hours to do outdoor activities, even in February and in November and December and January, if we stayed on daylight savings time year-round. Now, I'm adamantly opposed to going back to standard time because I don't think anybody in Colorado wants to see sunset at 6 o'clock in March, for crying out loud. We like having that 7 o'clock sunset when it starts warming up in Colorado. We are a very outdoorsy state. And again, we're on the eastern edge of the time zone. You know, and it's interesting too. If you compare Colorado to France or Spain, Spain's on the same latitude roughly as Colorado, they're a good half hour ahead of our daylight savings time for their schedule. Their sunset is a half hour later than our daylight savings time sunset, and their sunrise is a good half hour later in the mornings.
All right, so since you know I'm not good with numbers, it's not like I work with them for a living or anything, but so in the winter, when the rest of the country goes on standard time, if we were on daylight savings time, that means what, we would be at the same time as the central time zone?
Correct.
And only 1 hour different from New York?
Correct. Yes, we would be just like, well, I live...
And we'd be 2 hours at that point different from California instead of one.
Right. And I live 9 miles from Kansas. So it would be the same as Kansas at my house.
Is 10 miles away on central time?
Yes.
Miles from your
well,
house?
Well, in Kansas, but not Nebraska. It's kind of funny how that works. When you go into Kansas, and I actually ride my bike to Kansas, for crying out loud, from my house regularly and hit another time zone when I do that. It's not that far. You're in the central time zone, but when you're in Nebraska at that same point, you're in the mountain time zone until you get to McCook, which is about 90 miles away. Most of Kansas, not all of it though, this is what's interesting as a weird thing for a state. Goodland, the little town of Goodland, which is down the road from Mark Hillman's town of Burlington, is also on mountain time zone, but St. Francis, which is the closest town to Ray, where I live, is on the central time zone. And it is confusing, but what it would mean to you as a person, as you know, just in your daily life, it means that at this time of the year, the shortest days of the year, and we're just starting to lengthen out good now, but around Christmas, sunrise would be at about 8:20 in the morning, 8:15, 8:20 in the morning. Yeah. You'd be able to see well enough to drive.
Yeah, so the only thing that bugs me about that, and we got to hit a break, is you know, you and I both have kids. The idea of, I don't love the idea of taking kids to school in the dark. That annoys me a little bit, but I do love the being able to have some light to do stuff in the afternoon. Anyway, we're going to hit this break. When we come back, let's talk about the not-so-controversial subject of civil unions for gays. We'll be right back.